Hey, Dog Speak Geeks, do you know that we offer virtual lessons? You can sign up at any time through info@dogspeak101.com. Also, don't miss out on our dog communication seminar on demand or one of our live seminars in Middle Tennessee. We would love to assist you with any and all problems that you have, so give us a call, set up your session today. Hey, Dog Speak Geeks, I hope your week is going amazingly well. I hope you have signed up for the Dog Reactivity and Aggression Summit. For $47, you really cannot beat the level of expertise that you're going to find in this summit. And don't worry if you can't hit it live, because you'll have the replay. So be sure you sign up for that. And if you've not signed up for our newsletter, please do so and follow us on all social media channels so you do not miss what's coming up. I will have some new announcements coming up in the newsletter this week, so be sure that you are signed up for that, and you can find everything in the show notes. All right, that's all I have today. If you are following me on social media, especially Facebook, you may have recently seen a post that really ruffled some feathers, and it was put out on my personal page, which, unfortunately or fortunately, I do have a lot of people that follow my personal page that are more business oriented and not just personal. So I have left it that way because I want to make sure that I am able to get people the information that they need to have in order to have a better relationship with their dogs. And so I have left it on there. And if you want to follow me on my personal page, that is absolutely fine. You may see some personal things. I have nothing to hide. But I do have my Dog Speak Facebook page. But this particular post was through my personal page. And you can find that at Nikki Ivey, N-I-K-K-I-I-V-E-Y. You'll see me and my Roddy is the picture, so you can't miss me. But feel free to go back and look. But I put out a post about the use of aversive tools and techniques and how I don't see a reason to use them when teaching pet dogs. And I posted that after, like, I don't know, probably my 10th phone call this month in dealing with dogs that have behavior issues and their previous training was done aversely. So they had training that was prong collar, shock collar, e-collar, whatever you want to call it. If you want to call it an e-collar to make yourself feel better, that's fine. But they both elicit electrical stims to the dog. And they do have a variety of levels. So I posted that it's just not necessary. And of course, you don't get a lot of traction on posts that are positive and they have all kinds of wonderful information for clients and just so much good stuff, but it doesn't get traction because our social media, our algorithms are all set up to divide and conquer. They're here to piss you off and to keep you clicking things. So needless to say, I had over 630, I think, comments. And I would say that the majority of them were from people who use these types of collars or training devices. Some were just owners, some were groomers, and some were taking people's money to do this. They did not have many nice things to say. And I guess I would expect, if that is your go-to tool to work with an innocent animal, then maybe I'm not shocked that you would respond in such a hateful way. I don't take any of it personally. I'm very comfortable in my ability, my experience, my education, my knowledge. And my job is not to try to change trainers who use these tools. My job is not to try to convince a balanced trainer to stop using the tool. That's not my job. My job is to educate the owners, to educate the general public on the truth behind these tools, the truth about how they work and what fallout you're going to get with it. That is my job, because I am seeing a lot of those that use the tools, their comments were full of holes. They were lies, and I'm not sure if they meant to lie or if they truly just don't understand how they work and are brainwashed in believing that if they're used correctly, they do not cause pain or fear. And this is where we have to scream bullshit. And I love it that, you know, they want to say that because I don't use it, I don't understand how it works. The bottom line is I know how it works, and that's why I don't use it. It's as simple as that. I know how it works, and that's why I choose not to use it. Now, I've been doing this for 30 years. In my very first year of training, I was probably one of the only female trainers in the area, and all trainers used aversive techniques. And we had guys using shock collars, cattle prods, choke chains, prong collars, you know, not doing nice things with leashes and collars. And I started my first year of training using a prong collar and choke chains. Now, I didn't use them in the way that you see a lot of people use them, which is a sharp correction with the collar, you know, yanking on things. I didn't really do that. I may have a few times. I probably did. But I didn't use them that way. It was more of using this, and when you pull, you're going to feel the discomfort, and so you'll probably stop. You're going to self-correct. I think that's probably the best way for me to say how I used it. I allowed the dogs to self-correct. Needless to say, 1 year in, I was miserable. I was miserable. I hated the tool. I hated the training. The dogs hated it. I hated it. I wanted to quit and just go do something else. I was like, if this is what dog training is, I don't want to do it. I'm not into causing pain or fear into dogs. That's not why I'm doing this. And thankfully, it was introduced to training using operant conditioning and introduced to more positive methods. Thank goodness. And that's when I went down the rabbit hole, and here I am 29 years later, and I have never used one of those tools again because I don't need to. Now, do these tools work? Do prong collars, shock collars, e-collars work? Yes, they do work. I mean, they definitely work, but not the way you think. They do not work in the way that people are using them today. So let's break things down. I want to break things down a little bit, and I want to talk about the four quadrants, because that's what this is kind of what I want to bring to you guys, because this is what you'll hear. You'll hear people that use the shock collars, they love to talk about the four quadrants. They love to talk about operant conditioning, right? So I thought, you know what? Let's do a short episode about operant conditioning and help people understand truly where the four quadrants in operant conditioning fit into dog training. What do they mean? And truly help you understand how shock collars and prong collars work versus using more positive methods and talking about the whole force-free, fear-free community versus the balance training, aversive, coercion-type trainers. I really thought we were coming way past this old school training. And then 2020 hit and everybody wanted to become a dog trainer. And the easiest way to become a dog trainer was to get online and read how to push buttons to shock a dog to stop behavior. And now all of a sudden, balance training is the way to go. Using these collars is a must. You can't have off-leash without this. And that's just bullshit. That's people telling you that their way is the way because they don't have the skill to do anything else. So I want you to be careful when you're searching for a trainer or searching for someone to help. Because another one of the things that I kept hearing with comments is that people who have tried positive reinforcement training weren't getting the results, therefore they went to aversive training. And I want to talk about the difference with that and how they can both fail. and, you know, and they will both work, but they both work differently. So let's get into operant conditioning. Now, operant conditioning is a type of learning in which voluntary behaviors are influenced by their consequences. So these consequences can be positive or they can be negative. So using reinforcement, anytime you're using reinforcement, you're using it to increase a behavior. And anytime you're using punishment, you're using it to decrease a behavior. Now that's important that you understand, because I'm going to tell you about the four quadrants, and this can be very confusing for people. It probably took me a decade before I was able to get this sorted out in my head, just because it messes with your brain and how you think. So let's start out with it's the four quadrants now. This is all based on consequences, good or bad. So let's talk about positive reinforcement. Now that is what I use as a training tool. But understand something real quick before I get into this, I better say this. Operant conditioning is not the way to teach, right? So I'm going to say this correctly for you guys. It's just a tool in the teaching aspect, okay? Because I'm going to talk about where we get in trouble when we just focus on the four quadrants. So bear with me. Positive reinforcement is you're adding something to increase behavior. So I'm going to add in a cookie every time my dog checks in with me. If I'm adding a cookie every time my dog checks in with me, then I am increasing the chances that my dog will check in with me. Why? Because it's reinforcing. That is why, if we focus on that, this is why teaching your dog to come to you when called is not that difficult. Have a relationship and reinforce your dog. It's just not that complicated. All right, so positive reinforcement, adding something to increase behavior. You want to increase your dog's ability to sit, give a cookie when they sit. Now, the other quadrant, part of the quadrant that I use as a positive reinforcement trainer, right? And really, you can't just say I'm a positive reinforcement trainer, because again, consequences are a part of learning. That is nothing that we can get away from. I don't care if I'm all positive, I cannot get away from consequences are either good or bad. Simple as that. What I can choose, though, is not to let my consequences be emotionally or physically harming. We'll get into that. The other type or the other quadrant that I use in my training is negative punishment. All right, now hang in there with me. You're like, oh my God, Nikki just said she uses punishment. The quadrant is negative punishment. This is where things get confusing. This means you are removing something to decrease a behavior. I'm going to give you an example. When my dog jumps on me, I take my attention away from him. Therefore, I'm taking my attention away to decrease the jumping. When I get four on the floor, I'm going to reward to increase the behavior of four on the floor. So I use positive reinforcement and negative punishment, removing something to decrease behavior. All right, now, that's the two of the four. That is what most fear-free, force-free trainers use when we're talking about the quadrants. Because there are so many other techniques and tools that we have in our toolbox. Four quadrants is just one. Now, when we're talking about aversive or balanced trainers, when they're using some type of tool that goes on the dog to elicit pain, is what I'm going to say. Because they will gripe at it. Oh, if you use a harness, that's a tool. A harness is a tool, but it's not typically physically or emotionally harming. Some dogs hate the harness. That is an aversive. Therefore, I'm not going to force my dog in a harness. I will find another way to help my dog feel comfortable. I digress. So this is what they're typically using of the quadrants. Positive punishment. Now, positive punishment is adding something to decrease behavior. Dogs running after a rabbit. We add in a shock around the neck to decrease the chasing behavior. So then they have to add in negative reinforcement, which is removing something to increase behavior. Hang in with me. Negative reinforcement, removing something to increase behavior. So if we're looking at this, dog is chasing rabbit. We want dog to stop chasing rabbit. Okay, dog chases rabbit. Tell dog to stop. Dog doesn't stop. We shock the dog. The dog continues to get shocked until the dog stops. When the dog stops, the shock stops. Therefore, rewarding the stop by stopping the shock. Okay, I'm going to go through them again. Positive reinforcement, adding something to increase behavior. Negative reinforcement, removing something to increase behavior. Positive punishment, adding something to decrease behavior. Negative punishment, removing something to decrease behavior. So reinforcement, increasing behavior. Punishment, decreased behavior. Positive and negative, adding and removing. That's how you can think about it. The way I have seen balance trainers use this is they put the dog in a down stay. Dog gets in a down stay. Dog's good. Dog may or may not be receiving positive reinforcement. Dog breaks down stay. Dog gets shocked until dog gets back into down stay. Shock stops. Or the dog gets vibrated, right? That's what they say. Well, I just use the vibrate. Or it's like a TENS machine. It's just on a level one or two. Here's the thing about the shock collar. There's a reason why there are different levels. Because the shock collar was made to cause discomfort in a dog to stop a behavior. That's literally, that's the patent. It was made to elicit pain to stop a behavior from a distance. An old school way that they used to teach retrieve or holding a dumbbell for like sports is they would pinch the dog's ear until the dog opened his mouth to take the dumbbell. And when he took the dumbbell, they would stop pinching the dog's ear. And I'm not lying, guys. When I started my training 30 years ago, those were the training techniques. Can you imagine? Can you imagine doing that? I don't get it. So the collar was literally made to correct a dog from a distance to stop a behavior in order to get, hopefully, the response that you want. There's no point in using this in pet dogs. Is there a place for a shock collar? Yes. I'm not going to deny that. I'd be naive to think that. But it's not in the situations that people claim that they need it for. I have recommended a shock collar to a client who had a beagle that would chase deer. And there is no type of management for this scenario to keep this dog safe. And deer can kill a dog by just kicking them. So for me, I literally said, look, there is nothing I can do here. There is not enough practice in the world for you to get this with positive reinforcement. And now that was back in the day, and it was the specific scenario, and this was probably, I'd say 15 years ago, maybe even longer than that. I said, I would recommend you find someone who can use the collar to teach the dog not to chase the deer. And I found a good hunting dog trainer who used the collar, and I recommended them, because here's the thing: when you're going to use a tool like that, when you're going to use a shock collar to stop a behavior, let's say chasing, we'll go back to chasing the rabbit. Okay, the way it should work. You start to chase the rabbit, you get shocked. Every time you chase the rabbit, you get shocked. Every time you don't chase the rabbit, you don't get shocked. Yes, you can add in positive reinforcement with this part, right? You can say, yes, that's great. Here's this. You can play with this toy. You can have this food, whatever. If we teach the dog that chasing the rabbit is never good using the collar, then we should never have to use the collar again. Maybe a reminder in a few years, just in case the dog tries, right? But it's not something the dog should have to wear. When you're using an aversive, a positive punishment, you should only have to do it so many times before the dog starts to understand it. If the dog has to wear it forever, then we didn't teach the dog. At that point, we're managing the dog and only suppressing the behavior. We actually didn't teach the dog not to chase the rabbit. We taught the dog how to avoid the shock, which means that now, instead of the dog making the choice to not chase the rabbit, we have to be in sight with the remote control, with the ability and the timing to shock the dog in order to get them to stop chasing the rabbit. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to watch my dog that closely. I like to teach my dog skills so that they know the expectations. And then if they do make the wrong choice, I can redirect them. I don't want to have to depend on a tool that's going to suppress my dog's behavior in order to keep them safe. This is kind of similar to your invisible fence, right? If the dog always has to wear the collar, then he's never learned. It's just a suppression at that point. The dog has learned to avoid the correction, not learned how to stay inside the yard. Over time, you may be able to remove that collar and the dog not test it. And then one day you may test it and you got to go back and remind him. But it's not something he should have to wear all the time. Now, that we've kind of talked about, you know, the four quadrants, and these are the descriptions of consequences. This is not a full training philosophy, okay? This is just a part of how we're talking about consequences. Now, this is where the industry gets stuck. Everybody wants to talk about which quadrants are you using. You know, you're using positive reinforcement. You can't just use positive reinforcement to teach a dog. No, the four quadrants are going to play a part. Now, I'm not going to introduce positive punishment. I'm not going to introduce negative reinforcement with my positive punishment. I will use my positive reinforcement and negative punishment, removing something to decrease behavior. But I'm going to make sure that any consequence that I have is not physically or emotionally harming. Okay? Important. Physically and emotionally harming. If my dog walks up to a skunk and gets sprayed by the skunk, is that an aversive? Absolutely, it's an aversive. And it was perfection of timing by that skunk. And I guarantee you that skunk would only have to spray about 2 to 3 times for the dog to go, you know what? I'm not going to mess with them no more. The dog doesn't have to be threatened with the spray in order to leave the skunk alone. Why? Because the dog learned to leave the skunk alone through natural consequences. We don't need to do that. So instead of wondering which quadrant are you using, the most important thing we need to be thinking about is the dog's internal state. The quadrants explain what happens after a behavior, not why the behavior is happening. When we look at behavior, we have to look at why it's happening. And most of your shock collar trainers, e-collar trainers, aversive balance trainers, they don't typically ask why. And I say this because I think that if they asked why the behavior was happening, they wouldn't be so quick to throw a shock collar on a dog. And I hear them all the time say, well, you got to train the dog in front of you. Really? Because you just threw up a video of a 10-pound dog with a shock collar on. That's how you train the dog in front of you? You throw a shock collar on a 10-pound Pomeranian just to get off-leash walking in a store? Is that realistic? Or is that just ego driving by the human? Because I don't see why that's realistic. So it makes me, I'm supposed to be doing this without this emotion, but you guys know how I feel about this. It breaks my heart when we have these innocent, beautiful animals that are so giving to us and that we choose to treat them this way, or we choose to pay people to treat them this way. And it's not appropriate. We need to start thinking about the inner workings of the dog, who they are as an individual, right? Am, you know, would I put a shock collar on a beagle today to stop them chasing deer? No. Would I recommend it? No. Why, do you ask? Because, one, our environment's very different than what it was back then. Now, this particular client has like acreage on top of acreage on top of acreage, right? So that's what worked there. Most of your dogs today don't have that, right? We have more of management set up. We have outlets for dogs to be able to go and do that safely. And so, no, I'm not jumping to that recommendation. And I would say that it's probably hard for me right now to find a reason to put a shock collar on a dog because we've learned so much more over the years, and more science has come out and more knowledge and education is available for those working with dogs, that we shouldn't be jumping to, how do I stop this behavior? No, we have to talk about the dog's internal state, because it doesn't matter if you, you know, if you're using positive reinforcement. And this is, I think, this is why people said, well, I used a positive reinforcement trainer and they failed me. Look, just because somebody is using positive reinforcement, or they say they're a fear-free, force-free trainer, doesn't mean they know what they're doing. If they're jumping in and trying to stop a behavior before asking the why, then they're no more educated than those using the aversive and balance techniques. Now, let me quickly say this is why it's called balanced, okay? They say balanced because they're saying they basically are using probably three of the four quadrants, I would say, that they're using positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, and positive punishment. So, you know, instead of taking their attention away in negative punishment, they're just shocking the dog and then removing the shock in order to increase the behavior, and then adding the shock to decrease behavior. So, again, when I look at these balanced trainers, it's not balanced. When you are focused on using positive punishment first and you come out arguing the use of these tools, then you're not balanced. What I would see as balanced is this. I'm going to teach my dog how to come to me when called. And I'm going to use all the positive techniques on that. And then when I realize that my dog is not coming when called and they're at a distance that I can't correct them or redirect them, and it's a safety hazard, then yeah, let's use that correction collar, right? Whatever that is. But here's the difference with me. I'm not going to set my dog up in order to need that. If you feel like you need to punish your dog at a distance, then your training, your initial training has failed. If you feel like you have to have that, what they say, aversive trainers and balance trainers say is, I'm just going to call them shock collar trainers because that's who they are. They're just shock collar trainers. If they are using that, they're saying, well, we're just using it for communication. I don't know about you, but the last time that I checked, dogs don't communicate with electrical shocks, and neither do humans. So I just don't, I think if I'm going to have my dog in a situation that could be dangerous, I'm going to make sure I keep them safe. Long line, or just not let them off. There's too many safe places to let your dog off leash. And using the excuse of it's the only way to have an off-leash dog safely by using a shock collar, that's bullshit. That's, again, just another thing that they're saying to make them feel better about using it and to make you feel, you know, like you need it. I have never put a shock collar on my dog, never even put a correction collar. My dog barely even wears a collar. And I just posted a video that's actually come out in the newsletter tomorrow too, but it's already on YouTube, about a day out with my dog in a new environment, off leash, near a busy road, not next to it because I'm not stupid. Why? Because I don't trust drivers, but also my dog doesn't understand traffic. So it's my job to be responsible in keeping her safe. But I barely even had to give her any commands because we built the relationship. So we got to stop thinking about what quadrants are we using and start thinking about the dog's internal state. Why is the behavior happening? And that's when we get into that regulation versus dysregulation. If you have a dog who's dysregulated and you're trying to teach them using positive methods, you're not going to be successful. You're not going to be successful because the dog doesn't have the ability to learn. Learning requires access to the thinking brain. And if your dog is dysregulated, they are in fight, flight, freeze mode, and they're not evaluating consequences in a thoughtful way. Right? A regulated dog can process information, make choices, learn from consequences. A dysregulated dog cannot do that. When a dog feels like they're in survival mode, that shuts them down. They cannot learn. And that is why you see a lot of dogs that wear shock collars. They look well behaved, but in reality, they're shut down. They've learned how to avoid the shock, not how to respond to commands. My dog responds to commands. My dog doesn't respond to commands to avoid a correction. My dog responds to commands because she knows that I have the information and that if I'm asking her to do something, I have a reason. And she'll be rewarded for it the majority of the time. And when she doesn't respond to my request, I ask myself why. And then I make sure that I keep her safe by redirecting her in any way that I need to without causing fear and without losing her trust in me. And when she doesn't know how to navigate something, she looks to me because of that trust. When you have a dog dysregulated and you're thinking about the four quadrants, if you're using positive reinforcement, okay, dog associates the behavior with a reward, therefore repeats the behavior. That's what happens if your dog's regulated. They're getting it. They're like, yeah, this is fantastic. Man, when I put my butt on the floor, mama is just so happy. I'm going to put my butt on the floor everywhere. And that's, I see that all the time. Like dogs don't know how to take treats while walking because they're so used to just getting treats in a sit position. And this is why I encourage people to stop rewarding sit so much. But it's the dog learns, hey, I put my butt on the floor, good things happen. In dysregulation, if your dog is dysregulated, the dogs may not even take food, right? That's over threshold. They're just overwhelmed. The food may not outweigh the perceived threat, right? They're barking at another dog down the street and they're already over threshold. They are not regulated in that moment. You're not going to use food to get your dog out of that. That's why when we work with reactive dogs, if you walk by and see me working with a dog, you're not going to know it's a reactive dog. Even if it is reactive, you're not going to know because it's going to look that boring because I'm not going to put my dog over threshold in order for that dysregulation to occur. And when we have a dog dysregulated and we're trying to give food to them, right? If we're asking them to approach someone who's scary just to get a treat, that can create some serious conflict, and that's a way to use food in a negative way. So I don't like to coerce my dog to go see something scary just for a bite of food. And I've had an episode on that where, yes, you can use food and it not be a positive thing. Now, when we talk about, let me jump to the negative punishment that I use, right? When a dog jumps on me, I remove my attention. I don't give them any attention. I ignore them. Ignoring is powerful. Dogs use it themselves. They understand it. I ignore. Dog can quickly learn, oh, she pets me when I got four on the floor. When I jump, she takes her attention away. And after a few times of that, they start to get the common denominator that jumping is not what I want. Therefore, we keep the four on the floor. Yay, everything's good. But if a dog is dysregulated and you try ignoring, and I ignore my dog all the time and it never works. Your dog's dysregulated. It's going to increase frustration. The dog may not connect the removal of your attention to that jumping because they're dysregulated. And if you continue to ignore them for all those things without regulating them, you can lose trust with that as well. And remember, we have to to let our dogs know that we know more about this world than they do and that they can come to us when they're uncertain. Now let's jump into the positive punishment. If you have a dog who is regulated and someone's using positive punishment, you should see the behavior decrease. Simple as that. If they're regulated. And then eventually you won't have to use it. You shouldn't have to use it. All right. So just like if I am taking away my attention for jumping, I'm not going to do that every time my dog jumps for the next 12 years. I should only have to do it for so long before my dog goes, oh yeah, that doesn't work. So I'm going to just stop trying. It's no longer a part of my repertoire because it doesn't work. That's how learning should happen. But if a dog is dysregulated and we're using positive punishment, the shock collar, screaming and yelling, squirt cans, squirt bottles, water hoses, the loud pet correctors. Let's see, I've seen people take towels and roll them up and throw it at a dog, or they clap their hands real loud and scream no. These are all positive punishment, guys. All those, when you scream and yell at your dog, that's positive punishment. You're increasing that fear to stop a behavior, right? You're making them too scared to do it. So, but if a dog is dysregulated, it's going to increase the fear, defensiveness, or the dog's going to shut down and they're going to learn that, hey, nothing I do works, so I'm just going to stop trying. Or 80% of the things I do gets punished, I'm going to stop trying. That's not balanced. 80% punishment, 20% reward is not balance. It should be 80% reward, 20% consequences. That's what we should be talking about. But no, most shock collar, e-collar trainers are using it the opposite. And then claiming that they're balanced, and that's not balanced. Especially when you look at their toolboxes and they have more aversive tools than they do rewards. That's not balanced. When you have a dog that's dysregulated and positive punishment's being used, it strengthens the negative associations and it may suppress behavior. It's not going to resolve the cause. Right, you're going to suppress the barking and lunging, but you didn't deal with what's causing the barking and lunging. It's going to be suppressed. Therefore, it's going to have to come out elsewhere. When you suppress a behavior, it will eventually slip through the crack and it will come back out. I promise you. And the majority of the phone calls I get are people that are dealing with dogs with reactivity, showing aggressive behavior, may or may not have a bite history, are extremely fearful, and have serious phobias. And the one thing they all have in common is they had all been trained using aversive methods. They've all been trained using aversive methods. And I think that's why I get so passionate, because I see the fallout. I see these dogs that come to me that have been treated in a way that is unethical. And it's inappropriate. And it's unfortunate that my profession is not regulated. And it is not, you don't have to have any schooling. Literally, someone can buy a shock collar off the computer, watch a YouTube video, and then start charging you money to keep your dog and doing nothing but shocking them. It takes zero skill to do that. And I would say that the majority of the people that are using these collars don't have the skill. And I'll tell you what's a really sad part about it is I've seen people who started out using positive methods, but instead of increasing their ability and increasing their education and knowledge, they went a faster route to make more money. And so they started using aversives. And I know several in my area that did that. And I have no respect for them, because at that point, it's not about doing good for the dog. It's about them. And there's no place for ego when dealing with dogs. There's no place in this world for your egotistical, drive to try to be the best. We're here to make a difference with these dogs. And, yes, results are important, but not when the results are detrimental to the overall welfare of a dog. And that's another thing you'll hear a lot of them talk about, is that results matter. No, they fucking don't. Not when you're getting there, you think you're getting there, suppressing behavior by using a shock collar. If the dog is trained appropriately using a shock collar. They shouldn't be being sent home with it. And the owner shouldn't have to be required to use it. The dog should be trained. But if you think you can send your dog off for 2 weeks to be fully trained for life, again, you've been fooled. It's not happening. It's not possible. Dogs, their brains work like ours. We're not going to learn life skills in 2 weeks. We can certainly learn in 2 weeks what to avoid. And that's what they're doing. They're teaching them what to avoid. How to respond to words in order to stop that positive punishment, which takes us right into negative reinforcement. Dog learns behavior, turns off pressure, right? I was asked to sit. I just stood here. I got shocked. I sat. The shock stopped. But if the dog is dysregulated, they're going to learn that they need to escape or avoid that. And they immediately jump into survival mode, not thoughtful behavior. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart, especially when people use these type of collars and tools in the name of sports, right? And obedient trials or Schützen. It's my favorite. They talk about how high drive these dogs are and they're great for Schützen, but that they somehow, for some reason, need a shock collar to bring that drive out. That makes no sense to me. If a dog is so high prey drive, then you don't need a shock collar to bring that drive out. So my guess is that you're using it to suppress the drive and only allow the drive that is beneficial for you in sports. And it's the same when you're looking at like police dogs. It's been proven that police dogs do not have to be trained using aversives. The majority of the police dogs that I have seen that, and you're not going to hear these stats because they're not going to let the public know, but when you have I've been around the law enforcement world long enough with search and rescue and recovery and working with federal law enforcement agencies, that a lot of the dogs that were trained using aversives are much more likely to turn on their handler and bite the handler or not out on a suspect, meaning they don't let go when they're told and they have to be choked out in order to stop, or they bite fellow officers because the drive is now in a dysregulated state. But when you're using positive methods, you're going to have a dog who's regulated, who can make decisions in the moment, and who can be responsive even at the highest level of arousal. But if a dog is having to, you know, avoid punishment from their own person, you're going to get a lot of really bad behaviors from dogs that are supposed to be the most controlled in the world. And they're not. They're not. I can't even tell you how many of them bite their own handler or bite other police officers. The apprehension ones, I'll say. Your drug dogs, they shouldn't need any type of correction collar, right? But yet I see them out there, you know, running a car with a canine and the dog's wearing a damn prong collar. You shouldn't need a prong collar to run a dog around a car. I didn't even need a leash to run my dog around the car. She knew how to search a car all by herself after I taught her, but she knew how to work a car looking for her odor. All right, so now let's go into the, I will stay on this forever, I know. So let's go in when we're talking about that regulation, dysregulation. So you can see that positive reinforcement will fail if the dog's not regulated, period, bottom line. And not every positive reinforcement trainer, force-free, fear-free trainer is good. Not every force-free, fear-free trainer has the skill it takes. Not every force-free, fear-free trainer understands the developmental stages or gut health, the importance of gut health, the importance of completing the stress cycle, the importance of understanding the genetic predispositions, right? So don't just be going out there and saying, you know what, I need a dog trainer that's not going to break the bank. Well, then what you're saying is that my dog is not worth going to someone that's going to keep them safe, that's going to teach them appropriately without causing behavior issues that are going to come up later. You know, yes, there are some really good trainers out there that are very affordable, but not all are equal. Even the ones that are charging an arm and a leg, I've seen plenty of them that they are not good, that they don't truly understand. And when, you know, they're trying 14 different types of training techniques in order to get your dog to stop leash pulling, and they can't do it, it just goes to show you all the knowledge they have is on the external. You cannot just know the external. You have to understand the internal state of a dog. Why gut health is so important, the gut-brain axis and the importance of that. I was on a Facebook page, a group page, a positive reinforcement group page, they were no better than the shock collar people, as someone had posted that she was working with a client and that she could not get this dog to learn how to walk on a leash. And she named like 8 different techniques that she tried. And I simply asked about, what's the dog eating? What's the enrichment like? What are the genetic predispositions here? Are we meeting these dogs' needs? Does the dog have any pain and discomfort? You know, are we feeding the right food? Is the dog capable of learning in this place? And I was shocked that I had a response of, my place as a trainer is not to talk about nutrition. That needs to go to the vet. And that told me right then that our trainers coming up that are using force-free, fear-free, are also not educating themselves, because it's absolutely our lane. It's absolutely our lane that if we're going to work with a living, breathing animal, we should know everything about them. We should know everything about them. Needless to say, I got muted on that page, so I left the group. I left the group because I do believe it's our lane, and a lot of veterinarians do not have the above and beyond education in nutrition. They just usually get, you know, certain diets for certain illnesses. That's the education they get in nutrition. They don't truly get educational material for nutrition. So it's definitely our lane. And I left the group. I'm like, I have a lot to share with you guys, but yeah, this is again just showing you that there are closed minds on both sides. I'm not going to doubt that. We're not fear-free, force-free. We're not the be-all, end-all, especially when we're not taking the time to truly learn about the animal that we're trying to teach. You can't just know how to, you know, teach a sit. And here's another thing. Nobody needs to teach a damn dog how to sit. You don't need to teach a dog how to down. They know how to do those things. Our job is to help them know that those behaviors are something we would love to see more often, and that we would love to get, you know, when we need it. That there's a certain word that goes along with that. Otherwise, we really need to be focusing on the regulation. Because if your dog's over threshold, chronically stressed, or lacking safety, dog can't learn. And think of this. If your dog is wearing a shock collar and is going on a walk with you, and you're holding a remote, do you think that dog feels safe? If you are walking with me and I had a shock collar on you and I'm holding the remote, would you feel safe? And you know that I can put another example in here. How many of us feel safe when there are people openly carrying guns on their waistbands? How safe do you feel? Now, we can say, oh, it's the tool. It's not the tool. It's the person using the tool. Bullshit. Do you think a gun was used for anything other than what it is used for? To kill things. A shock collar is made to shock a dog. There is no other reason it was made. How safe do you feel when you see people openly carrying AR-15s? So, if we put our dogs, or excuse me, if we put ourselves in our dog's world for a moment. I want you to just think about it. And you know what? If you're listening to this episode, more than likely, you absolutely do not use shock collars, whatever. But I want you to have this knowledge to share with people that think that that's the way to go. Or if you've dealt with that before with your dog, and now you're doing more force-free, fear-free. I don't want you to feel guilty. I want you to learn, but I want you to educate. I want you to tell other people about your experience. And if you had a good experience using a shock collar and your dog no longer has to wear the shock collar and it's nowhere in your house, then good for you. I'm glad. But you should not have to use it, and you definitely should not be using it for the dog's life. So the quadrants don't really matter if your dog's not regulated. You cannot modify behavior that is being driven by a dysregulated nervous system. You can only interrupt it or suppress it. So regulation is so important. That safety, predictability, agency. Right? And build that relationship with your dog. My dog knows. Like the other day, I went next door. We share a mower with her neighbors. And so she and I went in the backyard, Willow, my Roddy, and the neighbors on the other side of them have dogs, and they came flying out, running the fence and barking at my dog. And Willow's hair came up and she barked and bounced a little bit towards them. But then she stopped, looked back at me. I said nothing because I was letting her choose how she wanted to handle this. You know what she did? She came running back to me. She came to me. I rewarded her and told her what a good girl was, and I was going to protect her and that nobody was going to hurt her, but that it was okay to go say hi, that they were friendly, they were just barky, and that she was okay to go say hi if she wanted to. And that was that. Right? It was giving her that control. I didn't immediately tell her, no, leave it, stop it, come here. No, I didn't need to. Because I've helped her to learn how to have agency, make choices. And if she made the wrong choice, if she ran over there and started running the fence back and forth at them, I would probably have allowed it for a second, but then I would have interrupted it. Because one, there's a lot of stuff around the fence. I didn't want her getting hurt. But two, I didn't want her having a negative association towards them because we're over there a lot. We're close to our neighbors, and her best friend lives next door, so we're over there a lot. If I had punished her, then she could have associated those dogs with being something bad for her, and therefore I would have started to create maybe reactivity towards dogs. And that association is something we're going to talk about in another episode, hopefully next week. But associations is something that happens, and you don't get away with associations being positive or negative when you're using positive punishment. Especially if you're the one using the positive punishment, you're going to become a part of the association. But I digress. Look at that. Now, I'm not going to talk about how to regulate because I've done that in almost every episode that we talk about. We talk about regulation of nervous system. So important. So the quadrants will work wonders. Right? If you just stick with, please just stick with tools. I mean, stick with two, not the tools and not the other two. So if in a regulated dog, quadrants can be very clear in its communication. You do X, you earn a treat. You do Y, I take my attention away. Right? Those, you can use positive reinforcement. And yes, you're going to have to use some consequences to stop behavior. But taking your attention away is fine. Redirecting a dog is fine. None of these have to include painful or physically, emotional, harming techniques. Like screaming and yelling. Do you know how harmful that is? I'm going to tell you a story real quick. I've told it on this before. It's not even a big story. I'm just going to give you an example of my life, right? As a child, my mother had a varying degree of moods. She could have a good mood and it was wonderful. She could have a bad mood and all hell was going to break loose. And it got to the point that she was so unpredictable in her moods. And I was, unfortunately, I was the one that usually was on the other end of it because I was a little bit of a challenging child, I would say. But it got to the point when I was younger that when I would see her pull in the driveway from work, my heart started racing and I started feeling anxious because I didn't know which version I was going to get. Whether she was going to come in and ask me about my day and it would be all just good, or if she was going to come in and start ranting and raving about something I didn't do right. And that absolutely put a huge, huge negative on our relationship. And I spent a lot of years not being close to my mother until I was an adult and I had boundaries. And when I would call her, when she answered the phone, I could tell which mood she was in. And I would either get off the phone quickly if she was in a bad mood, or if she was in a good mood, we could talk for hours. And it took me a long time to get through that and to get over that. And our dogs, they don't understand the stressors of this world. They don't understand that you go to work and you deal with traffic, and they don't understand that. All they know is they're happy to see you when you get home. But if you come in ranting and raving, yeah, that unpredictableness, they're going to maybe even start acting like they've done something wrong when you come home. And that's when people say they know they did something wrong. So I went around, start looking around the house and see what they did wrong. No, they've just learned that it's hit or miss when you walk in that door, whether you're going to be nice or not. Whether you're going to be really missing them that day, or if you're just really pissed off because somebody cut you off in traffic. Can we not do that to our dogs, please? We just need to be that safety net, some predictability in this ever-changing world that it almost seems unpredictable day by day, which again goes to the whole, you know, episodes where I talk about regulating your nervous system. Lisa from The Infinite Unfolding, go back and listen to that episode. Go follow her on, Instagram, TikTok. Learn to regulate your nervous system. Find someone to help you regulate your nervous system. So when we are talking about dog training, we have to stop with what consequence should we use. Are we going to use positive or negative or positive punishment? What are we going to use? No, we need to start asking, what's my dog's internal state? Is my dog healthy? Is my dog feeling any pain and discomfort? Is my dog feeling safe? Does my dog seem regulated? Am I safe for my dog? Am I safe? Am I a secure attachment for my dog? That's the very first thing. And when you do those things, when you create the relationship, and this is why I say building relationship instead of building dictatorships. If you build a relationship with your dog, you will be surprised at how little you have to actually command them to do behavior. Now, I mean, obviously you have to do more than a relationship. You do have to help guide them through this world and help them to learn about things like cars and skunks, or, you know, you don't want the skunk to teach that one because that's really stinky. That's an aversive for you too. But yes, we do have to teach our dogs. But again, the consequences should not be painful. They should not be physically harming. They should not be emotionally damning. And they should not be something that we have to have access to all the time. Because if we have to have access to a punishment all the time, then we really haven't taught what we want. We've only taught how to avoid the punishment. So if a dog has to wear a prong collar to walk on a leash, then the dog doesn't know how to walk on a leash. Not in the way that you're thinking. The dog knows if I pull, this is going to hurt. So I don't pull. But if you say, well, he knows how to walk. Okay, we'll take the prong collar off. And then call me in a week. Because then you're going to need to teach your dog how to walk. Walking shouldn't be tool-based. My dog shouldn't know how to walk because there's a leash attached. The dog should just know how to walk with you. And if the leash is attached, that's for safety. Right? But a dog walking on a prong collar doesn't necessarily know how to walk. They just know how to avoid the pain and discomfort. Two different things. If dogs are being sent home with shock collars where you have to carry a remote control around, your dog has not learned anything but how to avoid the shock. So as soon as they learn that you can't correct them from a distance, everything you thought you taught them will fall apart. And that's just life, guys. That's just the way it is. I mean, the lies that are being told by those using these collars, it's disgusting. It's unethical. But the only way we're going to change it is by pet owners stepping up and saying no more. No more are we going to make pain and punishment in a way that is harmful as a part of our relationships anymore. Right? There's a reason why we got away from spanking and got away from using, you know, tree limbs to, or switches is what we called them, right? You go get a switch off a tree and you get beat with a switch. I'm sure many of us got spanked growing up. It didn't help me act better. It just taught me how to avoid the spankings. So, I mean, if we think that punishment is the only way to go, then we've been brainwashed. I think the majority of this world right now is just tired of all the violence. The small violence, the large violence. I think we're all just fucking tired of it. The last place we need to be doing it is in the relationship with our dogs, in the name of training. Stop focusing on training. Think of training is to teach a specific skill for a specific job. Let's look at it that way. Train your dog for therapy. Train your dog for service work. Train your dog for search and rescue. But how about we start teaching our dogs how to live in this world with us? Let's teach them how to navigate this environment. Let's teach them how to make choices. Teach them that if they don't know the right answer or they're not sure, that they can come to us as their owners, as their secure attachment, as their safety net, as their tour guide, as their upper management. They can come to us and we will help them with the answer. And not being afraid to come to us. Think about it for just a moment. Think about the life that you had as a child, how you grew up, right? What was the way that you were taught, right? How did your parents teach you? How did your teachers teach you, right? Were you more afraid of failure or were you more focused on getting the right thing, right? Getting the right answer. Were you afraid of getting spanked? Is that why you lied to your parents or hid things? Because you were afraid of the punishment. It suppressed your behavior. I'm not going to backtalk my mama because she backhanded me last time with that damn ring on and it busted my lip. It did not teach me. I take that back. It did not teach me to not backtalk. It taught me to only backtalk farther away than her arms could reach. Then when I learned that she'd eventually get to me and I still got punished, then I learned to stop backtalking. But the thing is that we never dealt with the reason why I felt the need to backtalk. And, you know, how many of us right now are adults or young adults or are dealing with trauma from our childhood, from that inconsistent communication? Let's stop it now, guys. Let's just stop and start focusing more on doing the right things for our dogs, making them feel safe and meeting their genetic needs and building the relationship that you want to have with them while you're both enjoying the relationship. You do not have to put a shock collar on your dog. You do not have to put a prong collar on your dog. You do not have to spank your dog or scream at your dog or yell at your dog or you know, muzzle grab your dog or spank your dog or choke your dog. You don't have to do any of that. That should never, ever be a part of teaching another living organism. And it should be outlawed And if it is going to be used in those life and death situations, it should be done by someone who truly understands the in and outs of dogs and knows how to use the tool appropriately so that the dog doesn't have to live with the threat of punishment. So as a reminder, the quadrants describe behavior, but the nervous system determines whether behavior can change, and we have to think about the internal state first. Right? We have to observe the behavior and start putting those puzzle pieces together before we start thinking about which quadrant am I going to use? Am I going to use counter conditioning? Am I going to use desensitization? Are we going to do classical conditioning? What method are we going to use? Yeah, don't even think about any of those right now. Focus on the things I've told you on this podcast. Regulate the dog's nervous system. Make them feel safe. Give them agency. And certainly don't be sending your dog off because they have a behavior problem that's rooted in dysregulation. You're sending them off to a stranger to put a shock collar on them. If they're balanced, if they say they're a balanced trainer, then I guarantee you easy to say 95% of them will put a shock collar on your dog first and foremost. I'm sure there are some balanced trainers out there that do a really good job at teaching using positive methods and then using the collar as just kind of to refine the response. And then they don't send the collar home. But if they send the collar home, then the job's not done, which is fine. Job shouldn't be done in 2 weeks. Dog is not going to be trained or taught life skills in 2 weeks. It's not how it works. This is why it's so important that you learn along with your dog and that you work with a professional who truly understands who the dog is, the ins and outs, not jumping to techniques and tools to stop an external behavior to make myself look good. Think about it. It's relationship over control. Go watch the video of Willow and I. We were at a cemetery. It was by Main Road. I think it was like a 10-minute video. I talked the entire time. She was not on a leash. And I talked the whole time in the video explaining the things I'm doing. And I think I only gave her like 4 or 5 commands that whole time. Maybe not even that much. I don't even know. I mean, it's just something we go out and we hang together. Now, if I take her somewhere that's a little more chaotic, like I think I'm taking her somewhere this afternoon, it's going to be a little chaotic and she's going to have to be on a leash because it's public. But I will have to direct her more because the environment will be a little more chaotic. And she, you know, that's a still teaching. I'm still teaching. So, you know, I put that video up as this is my training video. Because again, they all want to see, oh, let me see your training videos of you working with an aggressive dog. You're not going to know I'm working with an aggressive dog when I'm working with an aggressive dog. Because I'm not going to make the dog feel the need to be aggressive. Because the dog is going to be regulated before I start teaching. And I'm going to make sure I keep the dog under threshold. So that video is, this is my training video. When I take her places, when we go out in the yard, when we go to the neighbors, when we walk the neighborhood, when we, you know, go walk in the woods, whatever. It's all about teaching because the environment is new and that day is new. The environment's new. One day we may be in one part of the woods and nothing happens. The next day, there may be 4 deer that run across our path. It's something she's not really dealt with before. And you know what? When she does, I have words to communicate to her what I need her to do in that moment. Well, if she was a high prey drive dog, and, you know, she's got some good drive to her, but, you know, she's certainly not, she's a Rottweiler. She's not going to spend too much effort running after, deer. But even if she does, it's not the end of the world. Because I know that her butt can't catch them. But also, if I did know if it was a serious problem, if I thought she was really going to go after her and then just go and get hurt, I wouldn't let her off leash near areas where deer were. That's my responsibility. It's my responsibility. She can have just as much fun on a leash. I have less fun when she's on a leash. But she's fine. She sniffs. She enjoys herself. I literally, one time, my other Rotties, we were in the woods and some deer went through. And I let my dogs run after them. Because, one, I knew they weren't going to catch them because they were already way in advance. And I knew I could call them back. And honestly, I didn't have to call them back because they came back on their own. So you just have to look at it as more of a, this is a relationship. There's a time for fun. There's a time to respond. There's a time to make decisions. There's a time to listen to what mom or dad has to say. But there's always going to be a time to be yourself. And I'm going to allow my dog to be herself as much as possible, as long as it's safe, as long as it's appropriate. Then, yeah, I'm going to let her have some fun. Now, I don't recommend you go out and just let your dog chase deer. You know, I just knew my dog wasn't, you know, not going to catch them. I wouldn't let, like, little Myers go because he's little bitty. And if they did stop and decide to, you know, kick at him, they could really hurt him. So, no, I would not let him go. We have to be smart. We have to use common sense. I mean, we do have the ability to have common sense, right? We have the ability to have critical thinking skills. And some of us probably need to learn how to use them better. But that starts with regulating your emotions. And you know how you get your dog to stop chasing deer? Make sure their emotions are regulated. But I don't recommend using a shock collar to stop them from chasing deer. We have way many better setups, right, that we can use. There's a reason why long leads are handy dandy. 30 to 50 foot lead. There's also sniff spots where you can just go let your dog freely be off leash. There are sniff spots that are acres with woods and creeks and ponds and everything your dog would need to have a good time. To say that we have to have a shock collar to let our dog be free and off lead, that's just telling me that's lazy and you don't have the skill to teach it. Or you don't have the relationship, truly. I think a lot of them just don't have the relationship with their dog. Because I find when I have a relationship, there's very little I have to tell my dog. There's very little I have to do with my dog because of our relationship. And I say this not to ring my own bell. I'm good at what I do. But I want so badly for you guys to have the relationship and the ability to trust your dog fully and have this partnership. It's so beautiful. And I'm sure many of you do. I want everyone to have it. I want everyone to have what it feels like because it feels so good. It feels so good. So I see that my short, quick podcast episode went over an hour now. That's what we got. I just rambled on. And bottom line is this. Positive reinforcement, right? It's great, and that's what you should be using. Ignoring, interrupting, that's what you do with those behaviors that we don't want. We redirect. There are consequences. Everything in life is about consequences, good and bad. But we must be sure that we're not causing physical or emotional harm to our dogs. So what person are you to them? Are you their secure attachment? Are you their safety net? Are you their tour guide? Or are you just another unpredictable thing in their life? Because there's just too many unpredictable things now. We need predictability. And I encourage you to be that. Whew, that was a lot, guys. I didn't know how that was going to go, but it definitely went in a direction. But I hope you understand a little bit more. And if you have dealt with, force-free, fear-free trainers that have been great, please go and do some reviews for them. Go review the good experiences that you had for them. Because a lot of people are looking at reviews. And if you've had a bad experience with a balance trainer or the use of the shock collar, or you've seen the detriment that it's caused, do those reviews, tell people, because the only way we're going to stop shock collars from being used as a regular training tool is dog owners stepping up and saying, no more. No more am I going down this lie that this is the way to go. No more. We've come a long way since the shock collar was developed. And you can say, and I've had them say it on the post of mine, that if it's a cheap collar, it's a shock collar. But these new e-collars, they're like a TENS machine from the chiropractor. And they're again, missing and misunderstanding how detrimental it is for a dog to feel unsafe. So just keep thinking about that person walking around with that AR-15, with that, you know, that gun hanging out. How safe do you feel when you see that? You don't know that person, but how safe do you feel seeing the tool itself? Well, your dog is feeling the same way. And don't let the other, as my dog loves his prong collar, my dog loves the shock collar. No, he loves the association that he has, that he's going to go get to have something fun and do something fun, but it's still having that punishment in the back of their mind. So again, it's not balanced. It's still not balanced. If the dog has to worry about punishment, then that anxiety is going to play a part in everything they do. I hope you guys enjoyed today. I know it was a lot, but really, if you've got to start talking. You got to start telling people your experiences, right? You've got to start educating the people in your life, the people on your Facebook feed or Instagram feed, or, you know, whatever the case may be. You need to start talking. You need to start reviewing. If you went to somebody who did damage to your dog, you need to do a review on that. You need to do a review so that other people are aware. So you can do good reviews and you can do the bad reviews. Just be truthful. Be honest and be truthful. And if you're having to reach out to someone like a behavior specialist like myself because your dog was trained that way and now they're dealing with fear and anxiety, you need to let that person who worked with your dog prior know that. Because they seem to believe that all dogs are just sent home and they're all perfect and all great and they're living their best life. But the problem is that they don't hear about it when they come to someone like me. And so they think that they're just doing everything right and everything's great. But in reality, it's not the case. So many of my dogs and my clients come from those that have used aversives in the past. Because I specialize in trauma and chronic stress, dysregulation. And that's the common denominator. Not all of them, but a lot. All right, I hope you will rate and review this episode as well. Please follow wherever you listen. Make sure you subscribe. Help other people find us. Please share our episodes and our podcast with your friends, with your family, with your coworkers, with your dog groups, your meetup groups. Let people know that we're here. I just want to educate you guys. I want you to have this amazing relationship, and I want your dog to have the most amazing life that they can have with you. Be sure you're subscribing to the newsletter so you don't miss that. Follow us on the social media channels. And if you have an episode content, if you have something you want to hear about in an episode, shoot me an email and let me know. I love to hear from you guys. And I am all about talking about what you want me to talk about, because sometimes I run out of ideas. And so I want you guys to send me some ideas if you have some. That'd be great. And yeah, that's it. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week. I love you. I appreciate you so very much. And as always, love your neighbor.